of seeds.
Of lettuce. And so the children had to really think of a scientific experiment. So then what do you expect? How do you have a hypothesis? How do you set up your experiment equipment? So they had to build something. What kind of conditions do you have? So we had a condition with a dark chamber and a condition with a chamber with light. And then you had to do it at the same time. So everything was the same. So I started this experiment live on television, and 100,000 children in the Netherlands and in Germany, they did the same thing in their class or individually. And we gave the water, and 4 days later we looked at the results. So this was a fantastic test for the children because they were part of it.
Yeah.
And it was science. So then they knew, hey, this is science, is interesting. It's not something boring. Science, technology, and look what you're doing. And what happens? And they all of a sudden realized that plants are growing. What does it mean, grow? And what kind of factors play a role there? Oh, the plant needs light. So this was a very good thing. And I noticed that when I come to schools and I did this experiment, it is still... had a big impact on children. And this was one of the objectives also of the ministries, because if only 1% of these children more study at university in a difficult direction, then we gain already.
I'm trying to ask you about the vibrating vest.
Yeah, we have in Holland TNO, which do applied physics, and one of the things is how do you make people aware of what up and down is if they cannot see it, if they cannot feel it properly. And this is something that happens with pilots if they are in the clouds. If you make turns in a plane, you don't know anymore what down is if you cannot see it. And of course you have instruments, but it's always difficult to believe your instruments instead of your own balance organ or your own eyes. So another possibility could be divers in muddy water or firemen in a house full of smoke. So they were thinking, okay, people, especially pilots, look at instruments, but it's very hard to believe them. You want to believe your own body. So if you keep some input that seems to come from your own body, so the senses in your skin, and that might be more convincing. So that's why they made a technological model of this test. So where can you test this very nicely? Where is there no input for your balance organ? Well, there is no weight, so then you have no acceleration, no gravity sense. Of course, the rotation you still have. And that's why they wanted to test this for astronauts. It doesn't mean that astronauts will use it, because they can use their eyes. There's no clouds in space or no muddy water. But it was a good test bed, and indeed, it worked. So this test was a test in which there were 56 vibration elements, like the ones in your cell phone. And some gyroscopes, so, and then you could tell the computer, okay, now this is up, because this is relative, of course, in space, you have to tell this is up. And then you put a blindfold, you put plugs in your ear, because, of course, with sound you can also know where you are. And then my commander turned me around and all found my positions, and I had to tell where up and down was. Well, you cannot.
Yeah.
No, there's no way that from only the rotation that you know where up and down is. But if you put the vest on, then easily when something starts to vibrate to your right shoulder, you know that your right shoulder is towards the ground. I think that was successful. The vest worked and gave that information. I don't think it will be used for astronauts. Maybe in spacewalks, but of course this was a first technology experiment with a big computer on your arm. So it's not something that you would easily wear. But it might have applications, for example, for pilots.
The children came back the children were... I should put this in earlier, but I thought it was worth it. The children, when they were actually talking to you, they wanted to ask you lots of practical questions, like how do you eat and how do you get to the toilet and things like that. I mean, it's always fascinating, isn't it, when you get the vision of people floating around as well. Did you have fun with that?
Yes, we had a lot of different questions, and most questions are repeated, of course, but this is normal because it is a totally different world. So it's a good question for how do you eat? How can you drink? What happens with the garbage? How do you wash your clothes? Then you have to answer all those things. You don't wash your clothes. So you wear it a couple of days and then you throw it because there's no washing machine. The drinks, well, you can drink everything, but it has to be in a closed bag with a straw. And also the straw needs to have a clip. If you don't do that, then you're talking with your colleagues and all of a sudden you see big eyes and there's this big blob of orange juice floating to the ceiling. So you have to be careful what you eat. But you can eat everything. It's not astronaut food, for example. But the astronaut food is you only find that in hospitals. So, but the food has to be a bit stuck, a bit gluey, a bit sticky, yeah. Gel, because otherwise it floats off too easy, so it cannot crumb.
Sorry, I was going to say, you had a lot of training beforehand in space simulation. Did it come close to the actual experience of being in space?
We had simulations, of course, for the experiments. Sometimes the equipment was very like real equipment. And we trained it in mock-ups of the space station. But in reality, there was that it was much more cluttered. Far more equipment. And there is no up and down. So when you come into the space station, you're disoriented. Sometimes I floated into a module, and then I thought, I've not been here. This part, this module, I don't know. And why do they have lights on the floor? And it turned out that I came in upside down. And then all of a sudden the floor, the ceiling is the floor, and everything what was left is now round. So, and after a while it becomes funny. You do it on purpose, because then you have altitude and you count. So that is nice. So it's disorienting, and it's hard to find a place for your experiments. I mean, I thought of perfect location for this experiment. I'm going to do that there. But if you come there, it's full with equipment. And I thought it would be a quiet place. No, the commander is floating back and forth because he is preparing the Soyuz, which is attached to it. Things like that. So it was a bit different. We had training in weightlessness in planes, so-called parabolic flights, in which a plane goes steeply up and down, and in the upper part of this parabola, you are 20 seconds weightless. And there we trained how to put on your spacesuit, how to deal with big masses. That was good training, because there might be no weight in space, but there's still mass. So if you have a big piece of equipment and you give this too much speed, then you might not be able to decelerate it in time, and it bounces into another experiment. So that's not good. So that was good training. And I think the fact that I dive, scuba diving, also helps, because the floating on the water, you know, you are close to the bottom, you don't want to damage the coral, so you have to be very careful. Don't lose your legs and just slowly go around. And this helps the space.
What about the actual space within space, the coin of phrase? You mentioned earlier that it's quite cramped, but I presume you mean actually in the Soyuz, or is it actually in the ISS itself? I mean, do you have more room there? I presume the Soyuz, I saw a picture of you sitting in a fetal position. I mean, not a lot of room, not a good thing for a claustrophobic, I think.
No, that is absolutely correct. In the Soyuz, it is very cramped, and actually I would not fit in. Luckily, they have now an improvement, the TMA. Prefers that Soyuz, then Soyuz T, Soyuz TM, and now you have Soyuz TMA, and the A stands for anthropomorphic, because the tall Europeans and the tall Americans didn't fit in, so they couldn't be members of the space station crew, because you have to, in case of emergency, you have to go down in the Soyuz. So they had to improve the Soyuz, and they had a different dashboard, and there's a bit more space for your knees, but it is still cramped. And you sit for hours with your knees close to your chin, and it can even be painful in the end. You cannot really move around.
How long did it take?
Well, at least during training, many hours. In space is a bit less a problem. Because the weight is, but as soon as you can, you take off the spacesuit and you can float around and there's a little living module on top and it sounds better. But before the launch, I mean, I think for 6 hours you are in this cramped position.
And then the flight itself, how long is it?
The flight itself takes 2 days to the space station, but if everything is checked, if there is no leak and if you are in a stable orbit, and then you can take off the spacesuit. So you float out of your seat, take off your spacesuit, and there's a little lifting module on top, not very big, but enough to be there with 3 people. You can eat. The toilet is there, and so then it becomes more bearable. In the space station, you have plenty of room. If the space station is now 50 meters long, if it's finished, it's about 1,200 cubic meters. That's a lot, so I think maybe now half of that. But there's a lot of room, and I slept in Node 1. There's a piece between the US lab and the Russian part. And there's even a place there where you cannot touch anything. So you hang there. That's a nice place. And if you spread your arms and legs, you don't touch anything. So that's a nice place. So this is where I slept as well. So there is some room to move in those things. Some places are full with equipment. So you have to be careful that you don't pull out cables and things like that. But it didn't feel cramped in the space station.
Yeah. The question I've always wanted to ask somebody is it, and you're the perfect person to ask, mentioning sleeping there. Sometimes I've heard that people have problems if they don't have something heavy hanging over them, like a blanket or a duvet or something. Weightless situation, that must be difficult. Was it a problem or is that sorted already?
It can be a problem. I was so tired that I slept anyway. But it's true that it is not like at home. You don't feel a mattress. You don't feel your blanket, you don't feel a pillow. You cannot just, if you're tired, you know, you just follow your bed and crawl into your pillow and you fall asleep. But you don't have that. I could fall asleep just floating. Actually, because you don't have any stimulus at all on your skin. So I closed my eyes. Everybody was already asleep. I thought, let's see if I can fall asleep just floating. And it worked. So I said, dozed off, and then, because there's a little bit of airflow, and then you touch slightly with your hands, you touch the wall, and then, but it was possible to fall asleep just floating. Actually, it was, for me, it was easy, because I didn't feel anything, and so that was very nice. But you put yourself in a sleeping bag, so you don't float away, and if you're tired enough, you will sleep. But I know that some astronauts wake up with a nightmare that they're falling, which is true, they are. Only they don't hit the ground, but they are falling. So you're very busy. You're actually, you don't want to sleep. You want to look out the window. It's not a real bed, so the sleeping is a bit hampered. And a lot of astronauts take sleeping pills at least to fall asleep. But I didn't have many complaints. I slept an average of 5 hours, but for a short flight, it's not a problem.
So you had a busy 11 days. I guess it went really quickly. You must have been really sad to go back, in a way. I mean, mixed feelings. You obviously were apprehensive about whether you'd get back safely to your loved ones and everybody and whatever. But at the same time, you think, I've worked for this for so many years, and it's 11 days gone by in a flash.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. Luckily, I was warned by my colleagues. Some people said, take your time in the Soyuz to look out, because in the Soyuz you have 2 days. I had experiments, but at least there was more time to look out the window. There was astronauts from NASA, high management now, who took me apart and he said, take my advice, take your time just to enjoy for yourself. 15 minutes without cameras, do that. Because otherwise, there are people who have been thrown in space, they come back and then they realize that they were in space because they didn't take the time to realize it, to look out and to grasp it. So I that was good advice that I absolutely took at the cost of some sleep in the end. But I wanted to really have the experience, which I luckily had. And indeed, I thought, this is much too short. I made a fantastic list of all the places that I wanted to see for space. And I haven't seen that yet. So, I thought, okay, I'd like to go much longer. In the past, I thought half a year, that's much too long, I don't want it. But now, I think, if I get half a year, I take it. Because then I can finally do it at ease. You know, you have your weekends off, so it's much more relaxed. Otherwise, people cannot work for half a year. And then you have the time to really do all the things that you want to do.
Yeah.
So I'm really looking forward to come again and for a longer period and enjoy the floating and the feel fully. Of course, I would like to go to the moon. In theory, this is still possible. Because the Americans plan to go to the moon in 2014, and so then I still can make it. I'm not a pensioner then. I mean, John Glenn was 76, but that was an exception. But in principle, we can fly till we're 60.
And may I be indiscreet and ask your age now? Because you were last year you flew.
Yeah, I'm now 46, and but I'm realistic, and I know that in spaceflight everything is later than planned. So I don't think that the first European to the moon will be Andrei Kuipers, because it will be much later, and that will be the new generation. And then, of course, Mars is totally out of the question. So I can easily say that I would like to go to Mars. But in reality, if it's really possible, then you're away for 2-3 years. It's a big burden on the family, of course. So I'm glad I don't have to make the choice.
But meanwhile, back on Earth, I mean, you've been busy, obviously, doing a lot of post-flight experiments and research and papers and PR and talking to masses of children and things, but that environmental experience stayed with you as well, and I gather you're now one of the ambassadors to the World Wide Fund for Nature.
Yeah, that's correct. I thought, okay, I want to do something with the fact that I've seen that this Earth is so fragile and vulnerable. How can I help protect it? How can I help to protect this fragile and vulnerable environment? So I approached the WWF and I said, can I do something for you? And they took that, they accepted that gladly because...
2 seconds, I should imagine.
Why? Because people listen to astronauts because it's intriguing and it's positive and